a law or an ordinance prohibiting abortion in the city of New York by midwives or doctors, and that ordinance was passed to protect the personhood of the fetus, not for safety of the mother. The Supreme Court ignored precedents like that. At the time that the 14th Amendment was adopted in the 1860s, a majority, 27 out of 36 states, had very stringent anti-abortion laws on the books. The reference to quickening is irrelevant because there was a reference in the English common law to quickening because at that time, that was the only medical evidence they had of pregnancy when the mother could feel the baby move. But in 1985, we don't have to talk about quickening. We can see the baby in the womb. We have sonograms. Anybody that's seen an abortion can see the fetal parts. They reassemble them. So you can't argue that there's no life, human life in the womb. So references to quickening are just irrelevant today. As far as public opinion, the latest Gallup poll shows that three to one is the American view against abortion on demand. Three Americans to one are against abortion on demand. That is what the Gallup poll reports. So the American public is opposed to abortion. And when Roe v. Wade was decided, 50 states had anti-abortion laws on their books. So if the public wasn't against it, why were the state legislatures having these laws? And really, the Roe case was anti-democratic because we're supposed to work through our elected representatives, not through 9 unelected judges who very often make mistakes. As far as the legal, Professor Kogan talking about the legality of personhood, that's an irrelevant argument because in the sense that the Supreme Court has made mistakes in the past. In Dred Scott in the 1850s, they said that a black is not a person. Therefore, he could be a slave. So we had millions of Americans at that time had chosen to own slaves. And they said to the northern abolitionists out of Boston or wherever, don't impose your morality on us. We're not making you own slaves. We're just exercising our choice to own slaves. We fought a civil war over that issue. Today, what we're saying is the unborn, it's medically proven. You can see it. You can see pictures. You can see sonograms. You can see that there's a child in the womb. So what we're saying is that our society should protect the vulnerable members of our society. That's what American democracy is known for. We're not a humanistic, quality of life, Nazi Germany mentality in this country. And we need to stand up for the vulnerable people in our society. That shows whether we're a moral society. Are we willing to protect the weak? It's interesting that the ACLU has been at the forefront of abortion rights. They say they're defending the weak, and they're... Thank you.
Professor Kogan will speak next.
I'd like to begin also by making a brief personal statement. Just as Mrs. Holler said that she didn't like being included amongst people who are violent, I don't like being labeled abortionist. I'm free to exercise choice under the Supreme Court decision, along with my wife, of course. And we don't favor abortion for ourselves, but that doesn't mean that we should impose our views upon everyone else in the country. Let me begin by saying something that Mrs. Holler just mentioned with regard to the 14th Amendment and Dred Scott. That's an unfortunate statement, I think, that she made. The court did in Dred Scott say that blacks were not persons. We had a civil war, and the 14th Amendment, the very amendment and the very clause we're talking about, overruled Dred Scott. That was the intention of the 14th Amendment, i.e. to make blacks persons. There wasn't anything, and I've read those debates many times now. I finished reading the debates again 3 times in the last several months. There's no mention anywhere in there of an intent to make fetuses persons. It was to restore what people in the North, of course, thought were the rights of blacks, namely to make them persons. Yes, when the Supreme Court construes the Constitution and says that one's fundamental liberty means that a state law is unconstitutional, yes, that is anti-democratic in the short sense. It's anti-democratic because the legislature which passed the law does not have the final say. It's democratic, however, in the long run, because the people, when they make fundamental law, have said that temporary majorities cannot do what they've done if it violates fundamental liberty. What the Supreme Court did in Roe versus Wade in allowing in the first two trimesters women and their doctors to make choices with regard to abortion allowed them to exercise a number of basic choices, whether one talks about religion, philosophy, morality. Many denominations, the majority of Protestant denominations, the majority of Jewish denominations, believe that a woman should be able, if her life is in danger, to have an abortion. The view that that should not be available to women, Protestant women, Jewish women, and Catholic women who do not share the views of the Church, means that they would have to adhere to the views of some other religion. Indeed, many denominations believe that if a woman does not choose to choose her life over the life of the unborn, she is committing a sin. She has to choose her life, if her life is in danger, over the life of the unborn. That is the view of many denominations, including Protestant and Jewish denominations. Dr. Geisler makes interesting, sometimes amusing, moral arguments. But those moral arguments are not shared by a majority of the Protestant denominations nor a majority of Jewish denominations. And indeed, he would force people to sin in order to adhere to his particular religious views. Not only the Due Process Clause, not only the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, but the First Amendment, protecting people's right to exercise their own religious beliefs, would be violated by forcing people not to undergo an abortion when their life is in danger.
Dr. Geisler will next speak in rebuttal. As I anticipated, we heard many persuasive arguments in favor of the rights of convenience of mothers and women. But we didn't hear anyone address directly the issue of the life and liberties of the unborn, nor the evidence was not provided as to considering the unborn a non-human being. Indeed, there is a right, but the right is never the right to murder. Indeed, mothers do have rights over their own body. But an embryo is not part of their own body. It's a separate individual human being of its own. Ms. Taft said she was not trying to persuade us, but then she proceeded to persuade us that everyone should have a right to decide for themselves. My question is, to decide what? To decide to terminate the life of an innocent, defenseless human being before it ever breathes its first breath? She spoke of life before conception. There is no individual human life. There are human beings, a human father with a human sperm. A human sperm is not a human being. It has 23 chromosomes. A human ovum is not a human being. It has 23 chromosomes. A human zygote is a human being. It has 46 chromosomes. Why would we agree that the percentage of people opposed to abortion as was before Roe versus Wade, should determine the matter? Let me answer to this 18% of the people consider abortion wrong. First of all, the recent Gallup poll said 50% of the people favor a ban on all abortions except in cases of rape, incest, or when the mother's life is endangered. That's far more than the 18% that would have been implied by the other decision. The recent Newsweek poll said, do you favor or oppose a ban on all abortions except in the case of rape, incest, or when the mother's life is endangered? 58% favor a ban on that. Besides that, since when do we decide moral issues by majority vote? According to the Declaration of Independence, there are unalienable moral rights that governments can't give and governments can't take away that are based on nature's laws and nature's God. We were told that science can't determine when life begins. Science has determined when life begins. It begins at conception, when a human zygote occurs with its 46 chromosomes as a result of the union of the human sperm and a human ovum. But as a matter of fact, Roe did decide when life began. And while our abortionist friends are telling us we can't decide when life begins, then they proceed to tell us it does begin at birth. It begins when the fetus comes to the light of day. Even though the fetus may be younger, than someone else who has already seen the light of day, nevertheless, the fetus is not considered human. What inconsistency in our law. We have more concern with the life of the fetus, we are told by our abortionist friends, than the nature of a woman's life. The quality of life of an individual never takes precedence over the absolute right to life. Roe versus Wade decision acknowledged. Even those who voted in favor of it, the seven justices said, if the fetus is a person, then abortion on demand as permitted by Roe versus Wade is invalidated. So the real issue is still this. Is it human? What evidence do we have that it isn't human? And if there's any doubt, why don't we give the benefit of the doubt to the unborn? After all, they had a human mother, a human father, they have human genetic characteristics, they have human heartbeat, they have a human brain wave that occurs about 42 days after its conception, which brain wave is considered a sign of death when they lose it at the other end, but not life when they get it at the front end. It's inconsistent. Let me suggest that the argument that says we should not force our morality on our people is hypocritical. Civil rights is forcing morality on people. Everyone has a right to vote. Laws against rape are forcing morality on people. No one has a right to rape. Laws against incest are forcing morality on people. No one has a right to engage in incest. And laws that permit others to kill innocent human beings are also forcing morality, and that ought to be enforced.
I would remind the audience of the principles agreed by both parties before this debate started, that there will be no interventions by the audience until the debate is completed. So I would please ask you to respect a principle accepted by all parties. And finally, Ms. Charlotte Taft will speak in rebuttal.
It's fascinating to refer to Nazi Germany as humanistic. I'd never thought of it that way. I think it's important to look at some questions, this idea that we're having a natural progression from abortion to wholesale killing of everyone can find. Interestingly enough, those of us who are pro-choice are also interested in making sure that people who want to become parents can do so, for example, through in vitro fertilization. That is the fertilizing of an egg with a sperm outside of the uterus so it can be implanted in the uterus. When that process started to be developed, I thought, well, this is wonderful. Here's going to be an issue that the anti-abortion and pro-choice people can agree on, because people will be able to have children when they want to. And I was surprised to find that people who are against abortion also are against in vitro fertilization, because some of those fertilized eggs will be discarded, therefore killing a person, according to their view. So I do think that what you see, what you think is going to happen sociologically, you have to look a little bit larger in terms of what the real desire of both movements is to achieve. In my experience, Americans believe in abortion being legal in cases of rape, incest, or whatever their personal circumstance may be. Now, I'm not meaning to say that in a flip way, but what I mean is that when people are thinking theoretically about an issue like abortion, it's very different from when they're thinking about it in a concrete way about their own personal situation. I have sat across from literally hundreds of women who have said, I was against abortion until this circumstance happened to me, and now I have a completely different understanding of it. So I think that I did not argue that we should, in fact, make our moral laws by majority rule. In fact, I believe I made a strong argument for protecting the rights of the minority, no matter which side that might be. In this case, freedom of choice, I believe, is the stand that protects both the majority and the minority. Birth control was illegal in this country until 1965 for married people. I don't think that indicates that that's what the American people wanted. nor do I think it was undemocratic for the Supreme Court to indicate that birth control is a private decision, as it did in Griswold versus Connecticut in 1965. Many states still technically prohibited birth control for unmarried people as late as 1972, when Baird versus Eisenstadt, the case I mentioned earlier, declared that birth control was legal for unmarried people. So the abortion case, Roe versus Wade, and the accompanying case, Doe versus Bolton, were by no means the first cases that indicated that people have a right to privacy in some of these issues. I think that the mention of the word convenience is an insult to women, to those who care about them, who have struggled with moral issues as surely as anyone in this room has struggled. And as I said earlier, while someone may come up with a different answer than you, that doesn't mean you have any right to denigrate the process that they have used. We know, theologically, that abortion has been practiced for centuries, that while we have not had sonograms until the last decade, obviously human beings have known the nature of the embryo and fetus, because throughout centuries women have miscarried at all different stages of pregnancy, and we have had an opportunity to know what that development is like. It's clear that abortion was practiced during biblical times. Yet nowhere in the Bible, in the Old or the New Testament, is there any direct mention of abortion. While you can find dozens of references to prohibition of divorce, prohibition of wearing certain colors of jewelry, eating certain things, there is absolutely no direct mention of abortion. The closest the Bible comes to mentioning abortion is a passage in Exodus in which there is a clear distinction made between the nature of the life of a fetus and the nature of the life of a woman. However, I don't believe that the Bible has to be your rule. You certainly can choose to live by other means and by other teachings. But if you are trying to impose one set of teachings on a pluralistic society, I think that you are making a very serious mistake.
We will now proceed to question and answer session. This is addressed specifically to Dr. Geisler. Critique the pro-choice statement about Exodus being the only passage on abortion and other relevant data. I think in the interest of time that it was agreed that each side would make its comments from the table.
I don't think abortion is a religious issue. I think it's a moral issue. But since the other side has brought up the Bible, I feel that I should at least comment on it. First of all, the most outstanding Jewish scholar on the Torah, Kasuta, who made a commentary on Genesis and Exodus, declares that that passage is referring to a premature birth, not to what Ms. Tav said it was. The word further is not in the Hebrew text, and therefore the reference to further harm is one that is misleading and therefore void. In fact, the phrase used here in the Hebrew means to give birth. It is never used of a miscarriage in the Old Testament, though once it's used of a stillborn child. There's another Hebrew word for miscarriage, and it's not used in this Exodus 21 passage. The word for child is the word for child, not fetus. There is appropriate words for that, but it was not used in this passage. The word harm or injury, not necessarily death in this passage. And as a matter of fact, if they were referring, as was suggested, to that which is not a premature birth, then notice that there was no difference in damages owed between the intentional and the unintentional acts. Furthermore, the same logic, slaves would not be human, since those who accidentally killed slaves were not given capital punishment either. So the passage was misquoted. Furthermore, the Old Testament clearly speaks to abortion. In Psalm 139, it says the embryo is created by God in the womb. Psalm 51 said, "In sin did my mother conceive me." Jesus was conceived of the Holy Spirit at the moment of conception. The Bible refers to life beginning at conception, not at birth, and that is the issue. Is it human from the point of conception? And of that, the Bible is very clear.
Thank you. The response,
let me, all three Jewish denominations who take the Hebrew Bible or Old Testament as their source disagree with you. Jewish law disagrees with you. Your reading of that passage I read the passage in the original, I take it as you do, is an incorrect reading of the passage. The people over the course of many centuries in developing Jewish law disagree with the way you read that particular passage. That passage is the source of all three major denominations' view that the killing of a non-viable, unquickened fetus is not murder, and people were not punished, and under Jewish law, even as of today, would not be punished for that injury. And that was the reason for my statement during the course of rebuttal, that under Jewish law, as well as under many Protestant denominations' views, the mother must take her own safety as greater, as more important than the potential life that she carries, and not to do so would be a sin. I certainly respect your reading of it. I certainly respect anyone's reading of a passage, whether of the Hebrew or Christian Bible, to the contrary, and to base your own moral judgments and theological judgments on it. But on the other hand, I think you have to respect many others who read to the contrary and have based thousands of years of law on a contrary reading.
Thank you. Question to Professor Kogan. What are the legal implications for women, men, doctors, etc., if Roe v. Wade is overturned?
I tried to indicate in my initial presentation that there were two issues, one of which was, what is liberty within the 14th Amendment? I spent a lot of my time as a lawyer as well as a teacher talking to people about liberty under the 14th Amendment. Many people who I suppose we would style as conservatives come to me and have questions about, can I teach my children at home? I don't like the public schools and I don't like the private schools. I prefer to give them my own teachings at home. My response to them is only if the Liberty Clause of the 14th Amendment is construed by the courts to recognize the fundamental right of you to teach them as you wish will your case win. I personally support that position. I do think that the laws, be they democratic or not democratic, that exist in many of the states, denying people the right to teach their children at home, so long as certain minimal subjects are taught, obviously, English and math and the like, those laws that forbid people to do that are unconstitutional. There would be, if Roe was overruled, if the court decided that liberty was only somehow to be those things mentioned in the Constitution explicitly in its text, the right to use contraceptives of one's own choice would go away. The right to marry, indeed, which is founded upon the liberty notion, would not necessarily be upheld. The state could come in and say, well, you can only marry not under the circumstances that are allowed now, which is most circumstances except for a certain consanguinity, but in many other circumstances if the state chose to intervene. With regard to sterilization, the state could come in both ways and say, we want to sterilize because we're having too many children, as opposed to the contrary, not allowing one the choice of sterilization. All of those decisions, going back now 80 years, could be in grave danger should the court reverse. Response.
To respond, I disagree with Professor Kogan and would like to comment on what will happen if Roe is overturned. Number one, and most fundamentally, the right to life, the human life of the unborn will be restored and protected. Number two, we will reverse the trend in our society where we declare death to be a solution to social problems. Rather than addressing social problems through compassion, through programs, through helping people, the Christian ethic is love your neighbor as yourself. That's what the Bible talks about, and that's what Jesus talked about. And we don't love our neighbors as ourselves if we promote death as a solution. We help people. We lift them up. So if Roe versus Wade is reversed, unborn babies will not be destroyed in the womb. Now, the argument will be made that there will be illegal abortions. That's true. There were before the case. There will be again. There are people that use heroin. There are people that speed. There are people that don't pay their IRS taxes. But law is a great teacher. And when we make wrong things illegal, then we bring our society down to the level of the pagan societies where children were sacrificed, where babies were thrown into the rivers. And so the argument is that if Roe versus Wade is overturned, the human unborn child will be protected and will have the rights restored that he or she has enjoyed through the Christian tradition, the common law, the state law that's always been until Roe versus Wade came upon us.
Question to Dr. Geisler. Would you favor eliminating abortion altogether, or do you make exceptions for cases in which rape, incest, or a mother's life is in jeopardy?
What we're debating is whether Roe versus Wade should be reversed. So my personal preferences are irrelevant to the topic, although my personal preference are that abortion should only be used in the case of saving the life of the mother. I would like to refocus the issue and to say that what I favor is reversing what is in effect an abortion on demand policy. For the first 3 months, an abortion can be had in any state for any reason. If that's not abortion on demand, I don't know what it is. For all practical purposes in Texas, you can have an abortion up to 9 months for almost any reason, because health of the mother is interpreted so broadly as to include almost any conceivable situation. So the real issue is an issue of the rights of liberty versus the rights of life. Certainly I agree with our abortionist friends here that there are liberties and that that is a very important right. The problem is this: when the rights to liberty conflict with the rights to life, which right should have the precedence? I claim that the right to life is an unalienable right, that the 14th Amendment guarantees this, that the Declaration of Independence declared it, and that to take any other right over the right to life is both unconstitutional and immoral. Furthermore, the right to life is the basic right because you can't have liberty if you're not alive. And we're taking 4,500 lives every day, and there's no liberty for any of them.
Rebuttal.
Over the clinic that I work in, there's a billboard that says abortion is murder. Murder is a capital crime in the state of Texas. It seems to me that if Roe versus Wade is overturned, if the fertilized egg, embryo, and fetus would be declared a person, that the alternatives of allowing abortion in the case of rape and incest would be virtually eliminated. There is a split in the anti-abortion movement between those who believe that abortion should not be permitted under any circumstances, the purists, those who believe that abortion should be allowed when the woman's life is in danger, maybe those are the moderates or something, and those who believe that for practical purposes, issues of rape and incest should be included in the exemptions. I think, though, if you are looking for a law, a way to overturn Roe versus Wade, that you would not be able to make those distinctions. In fact, as I mentioned before, I believe that then anything that interfered with the continued life of the fertilized egg intentionally would be, as the billboard says, not currently, but hopefully in some people's future, murder. And at least in the state of Texas, I believe that that would impose the potential for capital punishment on women. I have been told by people who are against abortion in this state that they would favor capital punishment not only for women who have abortions, for doctors, and for women who use intrauterine devices and birth control pills. And you may shake your head about that. I didn't make that up, and one of the people who told me that is in this room right now.
To the following question, would you please answer the question, and this is addressed to Professor Kogan and Ms. Taft, would you please answer the question on when life begins?
Do you want to answer that question? I think it was many centuries ago, my understanding that there was either a combination of God breathing life into Adam and him becoming a living soul, or if you would prefer, there would be one about a sea of ammonia in which cells would come together and form what we would recognize as DNA-endowed life. I personally don't know the answer to which one is correct, and I think that you can actually hold both of those beliefs simultaneously. I don't think science and religion have to cancel each other out.
Again, I would remind the audience, please allow the participants to express themselves. That's why we're all here tonight, is to hear them.
If we have some time left, let me follow up for my... That's fine.
Oh, fine. Would you respond?
Well, I would like to point out that it is clear when life begins. It's clear medically. We know it begins at conception. It's clear morally for the arguments that I gave, for which no rebuttal was presented. And it's also clear biblically, life begins at conception. In sin did my mother conceive me. That which is conceived in you is of the Holy Spirit. That which is created in the womb is created by God, Psalm 139. That's absolutely clear. And the passage in Exodus 21 gives the same punishment. The death occurred to the child, or the death occurred to the mother. The most expert Jewish scholars on the Old Testament agree to that. Furthermore, to say, I don't know when life begins, and to personally head up a large abortion clinic in which hundreds of lives are killed, seems to me to be a morally culpable admission. If you don't know when life begins, then they might be human and you shouldn't be killing them. If in doubt, don't shoot.
Question addressed to the affirmative side. If a person is created at the point of conception, and if abortion is therefore murder, is a woman who uses an IUD which precludes a fertilized egg from implanting in the uterus a murderer? Why or why not?
Okay, I'll address that question. First of all, I'm not arguing here tonight that abortion's murder. I'm arguing that Roe versus Wade should be reversed. Prior to Roe versus Wade, the statutes didn't say that abortion was murder. There were criminal statutes that punished the abortionist who assisted the woman to get the abortion. So I don't think if Roe versus Wade was reversed that women would be convicted as murder. That wasn't the law before. That wouldn't be the law again. So the question about abortion being murder is not relevant to what we're talking about. We're talking about Roe versus Wade, which created abortion on demand, and said, the court said, we don't know when life begins because they didn't bother to research it. They took the briefs that the abortion rights advocates wrote and took them basically word for word. I don't have a problem accusing the court of being lazy or overworked. They didn't do their homework. They didn't look into the common law. They didn't look into the medical evidence. As far as the IUD is concerned and trying to answer that question, my belief, and I think this is based on science, for I know it's based on science, is that human life begins at conception. Therefore, any device, drug, potion, act, knife, whatever, that kills the fertilized egg would be an abortion. But I'm not a physician, but that would be, you know, my view. But again, the question is the fetus, is the unborn child human? And that still hasn't been addressed here. That's why we're here, because we say that all of us were once conceived. Everybody in this room was one cell. The only difference between a one-cell person and us is growth and maturation and nutrition. So that's the issue that we need to face in this country. And again, there are women with crisis pregnancies. They need to be helped. We say choose life, not death.
The last question, to which I couldn't respond, and
this question really are related. The that's a lawyer for you. The law obviously addresses each of these issues on its own. The IUD, which was not faced by the court, would be something that obviously in a row would be is perfectly lawful, and were Roe versus Wade overruled, and the states then free to decide, then any state could decide that an IUD was not a proper procedure under the law, and a doctor who implanted one and a woman who chose to have one implanted would then be guilty of a crime as defined by the state. The state could choose what the crime would be, including obviously murder. The law talks about life in many respects. The Constitution talks about the preservation of life only for persons, and that's part of what we've been debating here tonight. There's been no conception, no notion under the Constitution that person includes those who are not born, as I tried to indicate earlier. Statutory law has from time to time talked about persons in other ways and talked about life in various ways. And so to ask, for example, when does life begin, to a lawyer, gets a response, well, under what
constitutional provision or under what statutory provision are you talking about? The law doesn't have one definition of life. The Constitution certainly does not. You would look under various statutes. But in terms of what the Constitution says, there's only one clause, and there's only two major issues, and that's who the person and what is liberty. And I think the answer there is very, very clear.
Several questions raise this issue, which is addressed to Professor Kogan and his staff. What medical evidence or scientific evidence supports your position that a fetus is not a person?
I think that we are talking about medical evidence as if you can find an answer to a question that is essentially a question of your faith and your definition. As I mentioned, there is life before conception. It's not the life that you want to define because it doesn't have the same number of chromosomes. However, it is life. And as you would be fond of saying, a sperm, it's not a puppy, it's not a dog. It's, I mean, what is it? It must be human life if a sperm is alive and it is human. And that's the kind of argument that is made about a fertilized egg. I believe that all of our social customs for as long as we have been a society are based on the idea that when you are born is when you enter the human family. At our birth, we begin counting our age. We don't count it at our conception. The legal and scientific and all of the kinds of responses that we have to pregnancy are that pregnancy is the potential growth of a human being. I don't think there's any woman who has not experienced sadness or at least a number of feelings at having a miscarriage, but to say that that is the exact same experience, for example, as the woman has who loses a child, I think is incorrect in terms of how our society actually deals with pregnancy, with the fetus, and with a child who has already been born. I am not trying to persuade you with scientific evidence, and I do want to say to Dr. Geifer that I will take care of my conscience, and I suggest that you take care of yours. And I think that this is really what we're talking about here. I am not going to tell you that there is no life in a pregnancy. That would be ridiculous. But as I said before, I don't believe that an acorn is exactly the same thing as an oak tree, although they are inextricably linked in definition and in matter. And I do not believe that an embryo or a fetus is the same thing as a born person.
Response.
Well, let me suggest that it's not a matter of faith. Matter of fact as to when life begins. The medical evidence is clear. It's been repeated twice, and in spite of the fact that it's been repeated two or three times, we still hear our abortionist friends speaking of sperms as human beings. Sperms are not human beings. They're human sperms. Ovums are not human beings. They're human ovums. Zygotes, the combination of the two, are human beings. It's not birth that begins human life. It's human life that begins human life. And human life begins at conception. That's a medical fact. That's morally supported by the great moral creeds, including the Hippocratic Oath of the pagans, the Judeo-Christian tradition, the common law tradition, which was reversed by an act of unilateral act of judicial, raw judicial power by the Supreme Court in Roe versus Wade. Human life, an individual human life, begins at conception. It is a matter of conscience as to whether we preserve human life. And I cannot say that I don't murder anyone. It's against my conscience, but I don't mind if you do. And anyone who holds that kind of morality could use the same kind of logic for infanticide and euthanasia and murdering any unwanted or undesirable element of our society. It's a matter of conscience that we protect all human life. And the issue is, when does human life begin? Roe said we're not going to decide, and then decided at birth. But the great creeds, the medical evidence, and the great legal precedent said human life began in the womb long before birth, and we must protect it.
This is a question to Dr. Geisler. Alcoholism is the third leading cause of birth defects. If abortion is murder, with the parents being the murderers, must we then hold accountable the alcoholic mother whose child is deformed via her alcoholic consumption?
I think there's a big difference between capital punishment, which is implied in that charge for murders for guilty people, and capital punishment for innocent people. And I think it's a perfectly legitimate thing to argue for capital punishment for a capital crime of a guilty person. I think it's perfectly illegitimate to argue for capital punishment for an innocent person who hasn't committed any crime. And we've got innocent human beings inside the womb, 4,500 of them a day, one every 20 seconds, 1.5 million this year, 18 million since 1973, who've been given capital punishment without legal representation, without a trial, and without ever having committed any crime. I'm concerned about that type of thing, and I think every freedom-loving, life-loving individual ought to be concerned about it, too. Just to say that birth control is the same as abortion is, to me, absolutely ridiculous. Birth control is preventing conception from occurring. Birth control is abortion is taking a life after it occurs. And anyone who engages in the latter is culpable for the crime of homicide. Anyone who engages in the former is not. There's a real distinction between the two. You and I must take our compassion from economic, personal, social, and psychological matters that relate to people's liberty and carry it over to individual matters that relate to people's right to life. Because if they don't have this right to life preserved by us, they can't speak up for themselves. If you and I don't speak up for them, their silent scream will never be heard.